The only thing you talked about apologies for being an engineer, the only apology you may have to give is that this may not be known by many in the group, but our much loved logical framework matrix actually originated from engineers. It came out of engineering design. So if you like it, you can be very nice to Rod. If you don't, you may have to apologize for that, but nothing else, Rod.
Thank you, Dan.
Okay. Yes, okay, questions? Please.
Thank you. It's just a very simple question. I think perhaps more of a comment. You showed one photo where the poles were too close to the ends of the basin. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And I think, you know, it's very important that that photograph, because it highlights two important points. One is that the need for an integrated structure, because the post behind it wasn't thick enough for wider spacing of the post anyway. So they had to do it. So firstly, yes, the whole structure has to be integrated so that, you know, all the principles can be followed. And the second one is, I think that was an example of a retrofit where the posts were already there and they fitted the basic data. And that's an issue, you know, when you try to retrofit buildings, again, it's not an integrated system and all these problems. So that's a good comment.
Yes, thank you, FT. I'd like to address that if I could. No, it wasn't a retrofit. It was actually a house designed and built. And that's correct. The bolts are too close to the end and they would just pull out. However, the solution to that is simply not to have them coming down like that to the same post. If they came down to separate posts, then you could make them overhang longer and they wouldn't pull out. And that's the type of detail that we're producing as standard details. You will have noticed that we can put the load capacity on the detail so that whoever's doing the design simply reads off the capacity of the detail and works out how many braces or whatever the fitting is that they need. We can provide it as part of an instruction manual for work on site, part of a training program. And the whole set of information can be used over and over again to get it right next time. Thanks.
Yeah. I guess how do you propose on unfamiliar with both Redonga and Choiseul, two islands of Sorrento,
yep,
and neither of them have roads. So how do you propose to get about probably about 60,000 people there, I would think, on those two islands? How do you propose to get a concrete pad for that houses? To difficult terrain up the hills where their only source of money, and I'm assuming that the,
yep,
these other people here from various agencies are not in funding codes, their only source of money, well, it's nil, they're basically subsistence gardens. Don't you think you ought to have, as an engineer, you ought to have actually seen what they have there and what they can do? Because I think the use of concrete in those places is dreadful.
Sure.
It's not even an option. Even though you might think it's an option as an engineer, it's not an option as a village.
Yeah, you're dead set correct. I've actually just come back from Redonga about 6 weeks ago, and it's not my first visit there either. Don't get me wrong, we're not proposing concrete houses or slab on ground in Western Solomon Islands at all. The form of construction there, as you know, is elevated timber housing. And the point I wanted to make earlier on is that that's the architectural style of the area for the very good reasons that you've just said to do with economics. Our approach as engineers is to not interfere with that decision at all, but to take the style of building that they are used to, in this case elevated timber, and get the detailing correct for that form of construction. You may have looked at the community building which had concrete columns in it. That was part of the original design done by the government, and we stepped in to help them make some modifications to it. We couldn't change that original decision. But what you've raised is a very important point, because even the government architects in that part of the world don't quite understand some of the local limitations. And we as an NGO, a service NGO, servicing other NGOs, always work through local partners. In the case of Renonga, it's the North Renonga Community Association, and further around the coast is Atabobaloo, is the South Renonga Community Association. We work through with Red Cross in Cook Islands, and we work with Vision for Homes in Papua New Guinea. And the reason for doing that is to get that local input so that we're not making dumb decisions here in Australia.
Okay. Greg? Oh, is there another one? Sorry. Yes.
From my experience, I've worked with a number of remote areas where with the special engineers, we try to get the details right sometimes. But there's a significant resistance from the engineer community, partially because they think they can figure it out from their offices somewhere else.
Yeah.
Sorry to say this.
Well, yeah, no.
To actually work on, because we, our approach is to build on the existing skills of local community. That's the only way to ensure that it's sustainable. It's difficult to get innovation rolled into the process of using traditional techniques, local skills, and to secure the structure. But to actually do it without being heavily dependent on manufacturers that have to import it, costs that explode and blow our budgets. So there is a bit of a challenge. I agree with you, but there's a bit of a challenge there to actually make it happen, but with a more consideration for the existing skills that we need to make sure.
Yeah, look, I agree entirely with what you've said, and I may not have come across in what I was presenting, but I'd like to emphasise that we always use the local style of building. Now, if you look at a building, it's got a floor and it's got walls, it's got a roof, and it's got windows sometimes, and so on. All of those things we would simply not change at all. If it's got a leaf roof, if they want to have leaf roofs, that's fine. If they want to have woven walls, that's fine. All we're talking about is making sure that when you tie a post to the floor bearers, that it's tied together in such a way it's not going to fall to bits. Now, I've heard the argument put in favour of things like bush rope. Now, I'm sorry, bush rope doesn't work. A bolt is not that expensive and can be got. We're not talking about here about thousands and thousands of dollars for roof sheeting. We're talking about a couple of dozen bolts in the tops of posts. And once you've done that, you're sure that the structure, the actual frame, is not going to collapse. If they have to replace the roof, if they have to replace the walls because they blew off in the cyclone, so be it. But at least the structure is still intact.
Okay, Grant?
I know earlier on, and I was also aware of when I was speaking, that we talked about the complexity of the business, the shelter. But I think it's right to remind us all that the technical aspects can be got right.
Yeah.
Notwithstanding, some of the issues that have come up already just now in terms of the resources availability and cultural issues. My question perhaps is more of where else we could be going with this, and I suppose it's a question back to you. I'm conscious we're sitting in the Architectural Institute here. I was actually going to talk about actually the engineers and the other built environment yep. professionals. What opportunities are there to take this message through to the other professional institutes in these other locations? Because as you mentioned, there are national building standards. The issues often are national. To what extent, rather than this being just about through humanitarian aid and international intervention, what opportunities are there through dialogue between the civil engineers in Australia with the other engineering institutes, in the same way that architects should be working through that network of professionals to actually have that embedding this messaging in the national processes. Otherwise, we're forever nibbling around the edges and around disasters. Now, again, it's more, I suppose, a question of to what extent has that conversation happened in this region, or what opportunities are there to pursue that, of course?
Yeah, I think at the higher level, and higher level nationally, this does happen. I mean, it happens all the time. All the developed countries or across the region all have active professional bodies which talk to each other, have well-developed building regulations, and engineering and architecture and building professionals that are active and do the right thing at least some of the time. And the improvement of that, I think, will become through those organisations that already exist. And there are international conferences and dialogues and all sorts of things happening. It's just a matter of getting their house in order. What I've been trying to concentrate on, though, is the rural area, because it's sort of completely in another land. It's, it's like as if engineering principles don't exist, let alone architectural considerations as well. So I think in that area, what we've been trying to concentrate on is clearly define what it is we're trying to achieve. In other words, not make our structures too strong, but not make them too weak either. Clearly define the loads and the parameters that are acting on them. Produce clear details which can be reproduced in training materials, on drawings if necessary, or as posters for site. Always have a training component going with any building work we're doing, and then just gradually seeing it filter through the community. I mean, we can only build so many houses, not very many, but what we can do is we can provide the lever where other people see how to do it right and then adopt it.
There's 1 minute. If I can just add one comment from my own experience, particularly in Africa, but I think it's true elsewhere, and that is that as we moved into development back in the early 80s and we started trying to define what it was, we basically did so. We developed a paradigm of understanding about it that we sold to what was then called the Third World. We don't use that terminology anymore, but the basic paradigm was sold on the back of a concept which said, we are First World, you are Third World. If you want to be like us, we're going to help you do that. And that is still very strong in rural communities today. That is why the whole appropriate technology of the middle to late 80s fell apart. We don't use that term anymore. And it's basically because people wouldn't accept it, because it was considered a halfway measure to the standards that we have for ourselves. And I think these comments are really important, but we need to understand in many societies, particularly rural societies, that desire to make a quantum leap instead of something that's in the middle is a very real factor in rural society. Okay, thank you very much, Rob.